back. It's The Kaufman Show, your new favorite radio show right here on TSN Radio 690 in Montreal. And we should just, little disclaimer, Mr. Farrar, I'm going to assume that if your name is Lance Armstrong, this is not your favorite radio show. It might even be your least favorite radio show.
Maybe it is.
You think he likes the punishment?
Yeah. Maybe he just, he's a glutton for punishment and he just wants to listen in and, you know, see all the bad things that people say about him.
Call us, Lance, 1-866-896-2546. That worked so well with PK last week.
Call us. Don't sue us.
What gives you the impression that Lance Armstrong is litigious? Is it the fact that he doesn't remember who he sued? He sued so many people?
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the highlight of
pretty
that
straight.
Interview.
It's pretty clear.
How are you, Jay?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. It's nice to see you.
Oh, good.
It's nice to see you at night, like it's supposed to be.
Yeah. I've been all over the place this week, but today we went and did an interview.
Well, you were in
daylight.
In Don Draper's offices at Sterling Cooper.
Kidding, huh? What an office.
Jay and I will bring you in about 45 minutes time, our sit-down exclusive with Dick Pound. We conducted the interview this morning at the Steichman Elliott offices, high above Montreal.
High above. What a beautiful view from that building.
Gorgeous. Gorgeous. Yeah. It's a breathtaking office. And probably explains Steichman Elliott's billing fees.
Yeah, it's a little bit intimidating walking in there. Wasn't quite used to that kind of a setup. And that wasn't the only floor, apparently.
No, so. I think he said there are 9 floors.
9 floors.
Yes. So we obviously chose the right profession.
And the right floor.
Well.
Yeah.
Only 1 floor at TSN 690.
Right.
It's the 3rd floor. But you can't get in right now.
So please don't try.
Unless you have the swipe key.
Yeah.
Which suddenly I do.
Yes, you do.
Jimmy doesn't need to let me in every week anymore.
It's about time.
Progress, ladies and gentlemen. We are getting there.
Now we can get into the building. It's a start.
It's cold enough. I think we've earned it. We're entitled.
It's a start.
So Dick Pound is part of a panel next week. He's going to be speaking for the McGill Institute for the Study of Canada. And we will be speaking with 2 of the panelists that are on this 2-day event. It's called Lifting Off and Flying High, Talent and Success in Canada. Now, I assume that Mr. Pound is the lifting off part, because our guest coming up in about 8 minutes' time is Ross Revliati.
So there's the flying high part.
You know, they write themselves, Jay.
Right, listen, yeah. Yeah, that's pretty good. It's pretty self-explanatory.
Full marks to you, Jay, who you arranged both of these guests this week.
I did. I've never met either of them, but I've got a way.
You do.
With people, Dave.
You do.
I've got a way with people, and I can connect with them, and I find a passage straight to their hearts. So, no, it was nothing like that. It was it was pure luck. Let's be honest.
Well, if you want to be a part of this conference next week, it takes place Monday and Tuesday, February 11th and 12th at the Omni Mount Royal, and we'll give you some information as to how you can be a part of it if you'd like. But lots of great speakers from not just the world of sports, but really, it's for the McGill Institute for the Study of Canada, so it goes across the board. But back to the sports, I know that Daniel Sauvageau will be there, and so mm-hmm. will Ken Dryden.
Yes, he will.
Who still refuses to talk to us.
Not to us, particularly,
Jay,
I don't
if you,
think.
If, you know, maybe if you'd been less of a Rogie Vachon fan.
Yeah, I was always into the second era. I'm a Bunny LaRocque guy, so I guess he probably didn't like that very much, you know. He didn't play that long, right?
Dryden?
Yeah.
He's another one of those lawyers, right?
Yeah, only dominated for 9 years.
I feel like I should jump in with a call us, Ken, 1-866-896-2546.
Yeah, there's more of a chance of Lance Armstrong calling us, I think, at this point. I think we pretty much ruined that.
A couple of other guests on the program tonight, not Olympics related, but fun nonetheless. At about 11:30, we're going to speak with the Rivalry Guy. It is the new mascot for True Rivalry. A mm-hmm. company that we know well, Montreal company. They started the Halak stop sign shirts
yes.
back in the day and have grown since then.
Now, is he a large orangutan of some kind, like another mascot I know? Well,
that one would make for a terrible radio guest.
Well, you never know. There's been some bad ones who are able to talk. So sometimes silence is golden, my friend.
I would like to try and interview Yuppie on the program one night.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we could do it like
that. Ask him why he made such an ass out of himself at the Gary Carter tribute at the hockey game. Ask him that. That's what I would do. I'd ruin Youppi's day is what I would do. I'm attacking Youppi again.
No. We are on different sides on this one, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Youppi was perfectly fitting and in place at the Gary Carter tribute.
Yes. A large stuffed animal.
At a
dead man's tribute. Very touching.
Wow. Wow. You are such an ass. You heartless, heartless man.
That's what you pay me the big bucks for, my friend.
Damn straight. We will also speak with Evan Wansbrough, who was on the program about a year ago. He's the lead singer of the Isotopes, the punk rock baseball band. You remember the Ballad of Ray Ordonez. Jimmy, if you don't remember it, we're going to have to pull it up when we have Evan on a little bit later. But Evan is one of the 52 finalists for the MLB Fan Cave. So we're going to hear about that from Evan, and maybe we can give him a few tips and do's and don'ts from the people that we've spoken to from the cave over the last year.
Yeah, mostly don'ts.
Mainly don'ts.
Yeah, mainly don'ts.
We've spoken,
shave, for one.
Wow. Ben Christensen, of course, was in the fan cave and was a frequent guest on the Kauffman Show throughout the baseball season last year. Then we spoke with the winner of the fan cave right after the World Series, Ashley Chavez from San Francisco.
Who I'm sure is well shorn.
I'm sorry?
She didn't have a beard.
Oh, no. No beard. No beard. Skin as smooth as silk.
Why, she won the damn thing.
That's right.
Good for her.
That's right. So we'll make sure that Evan is cleanly shaven. And I think that's the show for tonight. So it's going to be a big one. And we're quite looking forward to it.
Yeah. Let's do this thing, Dave Kauffman.
Can we do an entire show without mentioning the guy that the entire show was about last week?
Which guy?
Well, if I name his name, then we can't do it.
Okay.
What was the entire show about last week?
I thought it was about me.
It's always about you, Jay.
It's always about me.
It was about P.K. Subban,
mm-hmm.
who is back in the news tonight. I don't know if you've seen this or not, Jay. But
I haven't. I just woke up
there is
about 12
media,
minutes ago.
A media feud afoot, my friend.
Nice.
Yes.
Oh, those are fun.
In this corner is the bow tie, Mr. Stubbs.
Mm-hmm.
And in that corner is the Depends, Mr. Stock. And they're going at it over P.K. Subban.
Over P.K. Subban?
Yeah.
Are they trying to earn the love of P.K. Subban? What is this, some sort of a duel to the death?
We'll get into it tonight, but needless to say, Dave Stubbs did not appreciate the way that P.J. Stock was talking about P.K. Subban on the Saturday CBC Hockey Night in Canada broadcast.
He took exception.
Wrote an article to it about it, and Stock responded on Twitter basically calling Stubbs a homer for the Habs.
Okay.
Hard to write an article with the pom-poms or something to that effect.
Okay.
So,
Yeah.
It's on.
Yeah. And, hopefully this is no kind of physical contest.
Well, I don't imagine
hopefully
it
for Mr. Stubbs.
Well, no, and for Mr. Stock, right? Broken orbital bone. You don't want to get in the ring again.
Right. Okay.
Dave Stubbs is a former WWF referee. Don't mess around.
It's true. Yeah, but I mean, you just have to hit him a little bit and he's knocked out for 12 minutes. That's the problem with being a WWF referee. You just touch him and somehow he loses consciousness. So I'm not sure that's an advantage, if you ask me.
Well, I look forward to seeing how this plays out. The article will be in the paper tomorrow morning. It's on MontrealGazette.com right now. And go to Twitter.com and watch the sparks fly. And while you're there...
Is that it? Are those the sparks?
Those
there?
Are the fireworks.
Okay.
While you're there... Mr. Farrar, my co-host, is at J-Pub Radio. I am at The Kauffman Show. This is The Kauffman Show. And we'll be back with Ross Rebliati, 1998 snowboard gold medal winner. It's Irie.
Dr. John, Mac Rebenack.
The thankfulness of the band and all the fellas. tonight. Said tonight. Sweet confusion under the moonlight. Such a night. Such a night. Got to steal away. The time seemed right. Baby, your eyes met mine at a glance.
All right, we're back. It's the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar. Our next guest will be appearing next Monday at, or is it Tuesday? I'm not sure. The conference is Monday.
Well, it's
and
a two-day
Tuesday.
Conference.
There you go. So yeah. If you go to both days, you're going to see our guest.
You're going to see him no matter what.
The conference is called Lifting Off and Flying High, Talent and Success in Canada. It's brought to you by the McGill Institute for the Study of Canada. We'll be at the Omni Hotel next week. Some of the goals of the conference is to tackle questions such as this. Is Canada good at spotting talent and supporting it through incubation and liftoff? Despite our much-touted multiculturalism, do we offer career opportunities to Canadians of all backgrounds? Can Canada sustain careers in culture, sports, and high tech through mid-career and beyond once the initial burst of success has passed? Let's bring in our next guest and maybe ask him a couple of these questions and a couple of our own. Ross Rebliati was the 1998 gold medal-winning snowboarder for Canada. And my God, Jay, it feels like yesterday.
It really does.
I was shocked when I realized that it's 15 years ago. I remember being up in the middle of the night watching those games and being inspired. You know that Vancouver was still a while away.
Mm-hmm.
But I think at that point, people were still hoping for Quebec City to get a games. But anyways, let's welcome in Ross Rebliati. Hello, Ross. How are you?
Hey, good. Thanks, guys.
It's great to hear your voice, man. It's been a while. We saw that you were in the news a couple of weeks ago, and we'll get to that in a minute. But what got you involved with this conference?
Well, I guess it's my, the endeavor that we've initiated to open up these medical marijuana dispensaries, and under the Ross's Gold banner has created quite a lot of interest, actually.
Right, but and that. I'm sorry.
They were like, dude, you got to get to this conference.
And McGill was like, whoa, this guy's opening up a pot dispensary. He's got to come and talk to us. I don't see how's the connection between this conference at McGill and the pot dispensary?
I think it's just a matter of McGill understanding the importance of having people that are recognized and that have inspired people in the past. And I think that, you know, with my recent foray back into the media, that I guess they figure I'm the guy again.
Well, I know, it is a bit of a recent foray with this news, but, I mean, you've been in the news. You were a candidate for, weren't you going to run for office in for the Liberals in the last federal election?
Yeah, exactly. I ran, actually won my nomination to run for MP against Stockwell Day in the Okanagan-Coquihalla riding, and that was a really interesting and educational experience for me. I went to Ottawa and had my my day there in caucus and delivered a speech in French and English. And it was, you know, a really great experience.
Is that something that interests you?
It does. And I guess I've fallen into, you know, watching politics on TV, watching news, getting into the whole new media thing over the last 20 years as it's developed. And I just found myself a little bit, you know, more interested in it than I would have expected.
How involved are you in sports still, Ross?
Oh yeah, that's pretty much what I do. You know, I've been up 40 days this year on Whistler, and I do a lot of road biking and dirt biking in the summertime. And yeah, just pretty much my life has always revolved around, sports and healthy living.
Was the opening of dispensaries, now it's not just one, I know you want to open a flagship in Whistler, and then I guess the goal is to open more across BC, right?
Yeah, across BC and then eventually all of Canada. That would be our goal.
Can I ask about the rules and how this works? Is this sort of like in California where somebody needs a doctor's note in order to get the pot?
Yeah. We're with the new laws coming down next year, March of 2014, will be able to have a nurse practitioner or doctor on site literally filling prescriptions.
Okay, so somebody can walk in and...
No licenses it will be required anymore. So you can just come in. Nurse can, you know, hear your you know, listen to your case and then write a prescription for you.
Is there a statute of limitations on talking about what happened in 98 as far as the getting busted or getting having tested positive?
You mean if I could still get in trouble? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I'm wondering if you can say now that we have history behind us, whether you were just in the room or not, or whether you were actually smoking the joint.
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's been asked recently again, and I think that whether or not there's a statute of limitations, I can honestly tell you that it was completely secondhand smoke, and there's no way in the world that I would have jeopardized my shot at being on the very first ever Canadian snowboard Olympic team, and let alone, you know, put anything between me and winning the first ever gold medal in snowboarding.
Sure, except that it wasn't banned at the time, was it?
Exactly, and that was the, you know, the kind of the bigger controversy was how I went through so much just to find out in the end that it wasn't on the list of banned substances in the first place.
So I don't understand. Did the COC tell you that this was something that you couldn't do? And then, because, again, I don't know why you would be preventing yourself from smoking if it wasn't illegal.
Well,
illegal. Illegal is the wrong word, because obviously it was illegal, but it wasn't on the list of banned substances for the Olympics.
Right, and so they determined that for the IOC, International Olympic Committee, list of banned substances, that as far as performance enhancement was concerned, that cannabis was not on that list. Now, the confusion is that on the World Cup, so the FIS, the Federation International du Ski, did have it on their list. And that's why we were abstaining and trying to pass our drug tests the best that we could. And, you know, for the snowboarders, I don't think that, you know, doping or anything like that is, you know, was part of our character or part of the sport whatsoever. And just for a few select people like myself, we you know, gave up, you know, using cannabis months and months. Like, for me, it was like probably April, May, you know, what was it, 1997,
right,
that I stopped. And then, but I just didn't realize that I could actually still test positive for it through secondhand smoke. And, you know, there was a lot of instances where I was kind of in the environment, and especially towards the end of 1997 and the beginning of 98.
You were living in Whistler in the late 1990s. I think it might have been hard to avoid.
Well, honestly, it was. And, you know, I moved up to Whistler in the early, like in 1990. And, you know, that was kind of, you know, Whistler had gone through a lot of changes and was becoming more and more sort of modern and mainstream, but it still had that edgy component to it that really attracted people to the valley here.
Now, you say that it wasn't part of the makeup of you and the riders, and obviously when somebody's chasing an Olympic dream, they're able to compartmentalize and prioritize. That being said, right now you're about to open this chain of businesses that pretty much capitalizes on the culture of snowboarding. I mean, Whistler is skiing and snowboarding, and I'd imagine that a couple of joints get smoked in Whistler.
Well, I guess there's that angle of it, for sure. I think that it's a bit of a stereotype just to target snowboarding. I think it's more prevalent all across the board on a mainstream level.
Oh, no, I mean, but the town of Whistler is a ski and snowboard town.
Sure.
So, therefore, I mean, opening it there as compared to, I mean, if you opened it on Hastings in the east side of Vancouver, there'd be a whole other clientele that you'd be wanting to avoid.
Yeah, I mean, Whistler does have, you know, the ski town mentality, and I think all across the board, you know, ski resorts in general sort of attract the same, you know, type of people. And, you know, for me, it's more of the fact that, you know, this is where I'm from. This is my home. I feel comfortable doing our flagship store here. It's just, for me, it was a natural decision. It wasn't about capitalizing on the culture here whatsoever. It was just seemed like the right thing to do in the right place at the right time.
finishing up with gold medalist Ross Rebliati, who's in BC right now. And Jay, sorry.
No, I'm good.
Oh, okay.
I'm just listening.
Oh, okay.
That's what I do. I listen.
And you're quite good at it.
Thank you.
Ross, now you're going to be coming into Montreal next week. You're going to be on a panel with Dick Pound and Daniel Sauvageau. Where do you think the conversation's going to go?
Well, that's a good question. I think it's, you know, I'm going to personally stick to, you know, trying to answer the questions and being a productive part of the panel. You know, I think that a lot of the questions that you mentioned that are going to come up, you know, have kind of happened to me differently than most athletes. I went through a different experience. I had something different happen to me than what happens to most athletes.
Right.
So I'm kind of looking at it from a unique perspective. I'm going to do my best, though, to sort of lend a hand. I think where I'm going to be able to shed some light is, having known a lot of my competitors on a personal level from around the world and how those countries take care of their Olympic athletes as compared to the way Canada deals with theirs.
Ross, I don't really have a question for you, but I just want to say I appreciate your candor. And if you do get into politics, well, that's the kind of stuff that we need to hear. So here's wishing you luck with that.
Thanks a lot. I really appreciate that. It's great.
Ross, are you there, Ross?
Yes.
Hello.
I'm here.
Oh, yeah. Okay, perfect. Awesome. Okay, sorry, I don't know what happened.
He just
there.
Hung up. He's like, yeah, that's good enough for me. I'm done.
For me. Thanks, guys.
Ross, thanks so much for your time tonight. We really appreciate it. Jay and I will be at the conference. We'll come say hi next week. And next time I'm in the village, once it's open, I will definitely stop in and say hello.
I'll give you a personal tour. That sounds great.
Looking forward to it. Thanks a lot, Ross.
You bet.
All the
thanks
best.
Thanks again. Bye for now.
There he goes. Former gold medal winner. Boy, when I was in grade 11... every kid wanted to snowboard like Ross Rebliati.
Sure, man.
Ooh, yeah. This is the Kaufman
hey,
Show.
Hey, everybody.
We'll be back.
How you doing? Hey, what's up there?
I love this song.
Hey,
I love, shut up. I love this song.
Ooh, yeah.
Shut up, Lou. I want to jam it with you. I'm jamming. Jamming, then I hope you like jamming too.
Our thanks to Ross Rebliati. This is the Kaufman Show. We'll be back with the rivalry guy jamming.
Something and the Beyonce. I don't know the song.
I don't think you're ready for this.
There it is. Okay.
You. No, do you think anybody will notice?
Not at all.
No, we're good.
Not at all. Who would notice music just stopping all of a sudden and then me singing?
Well, I
nobody.
Feel like it fits perfectly, right?
Nobody. I like this song better when it stops.
And on that note, welcome back to the Kaufman Show.
By the way, for any snowboarders that were listening,
yes,
you know, Dave wasn't trying to say that all snowboarders are weed smokers.
No, of course not.
But it is Bill Maher that said once that not all Jews are dentists, but all dentists are Jews.
Wow. Well, fellow Jew... Jay Farrar.
I am not a Jew.
Damn it.
No. Not that I wouldn't want to be one.
Are people tweeting at J-Pub Radio saying that we didn't handle that properly?
Handle what? No. No, nobody said anything. Okay. I just want to make it clear that
were we
you
not
don't
ready
think,
for that jelly?
Yeah, that you don't think that all snowboarders are pot smokers.
No,
I mean, we don't.
Not.
We wouldn't
That's
want
crazy.
That would be ridiculous.
No, I don't like to generalize. That's what people do in Russia.
Yes.
Welcome back to the show.
Russia.
Well, I don't know. It seems like a place where people might generalize.
Yeah, pick on a small country next time. You never know what's going to happen to you.
We are back, and as you can tell by that music that we came in on, we're off our game right now. That's just, that totally threw us. Totally threw
yeah.
us. Jimmy, why do you want to play Destiny's Child? What's going
it
on
wasn't,
here?
It wasn't his fault.
No, it was me.
It was you.
I'm pretty sure I did something similar last year after Madonna's Halftime Madness.
Mm-hmm.
But I liked Beyonce. I thought she was great last night.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's she's like watching Tina Turner.
Yeah. Oh, no, she's not.
She's the closest thing you'll get to watching Tina Turner. It's a hybrid between Tina Turner and then when Destiny's Child is there, it's Diana Ross and the Supremes.
Okay.
Well, we're not allowed to compare.
I don't think it merits any kind of comparison.
It's definitely who she tries to base herself on.
Well, no kidding. Everybody tries to base themselves on something else, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, but I feel like she attains it. She gets pretty close.
She puts on a show. Yeah.
I was impressed last night.
She's no Tina Turner, though.
No, but Tina Turner is... Tina Turner couldn't do the halftime show anymore with the same kind of pizzazz that Beyonce did last night.
Okay.
She brought it.
She brought it. Yeah, she did.
13 minutes, and I felt like she gave an hour's worth in there.
Yeah, so did I, but for different reasons. I enjoyed the power outage more. But anyway, that's just my opinion.
Who cares what we think?
Yeah, right? Who cares, right? We're just on radio.
We're about to bring in the rivalry guy from True Rivalry. The rivalry guy is making his radio debut right now. Cover your ears, little children. The rivalry guy is here.
What's going on, guys?
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
We're great. A little football hangover, but feeling fantastic.
I heard there was a football game at the Beyonce concert last night.
That's what they say.
Yeah,
that's what they say.
Cool.
Yeah, you know, there was one last year at the Madonna show, too.
Oh, yeah?
A few years ago, there was one at the Stones concert. That was pretty cool.
The shows are
always really short.
The Tina Turner reference? Maybe Tina Turner meets Milli Vanilli, you know... Picks and chooses when she wants to sing.
I don't think she was lip syncing for a second last night. I thought it was very obvious that she was singing.
I'll tell you this much. Jay-Z is one lucky man.
I agree.
One lucky man.
I agree.
She is a good-looking woman.
She's a very talented and capable woman.
Yes. Yes. But I thought we were here to discuss sports.
We are. We are. We get sidetracked occasionally.
Interesting.
It's a thing that happens on this show.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, you have to be able to roll with the punches on the Kaufman Show.
Sure, no problem. We
might talk about economics. I mean, we can go to politics right now, and then we boom right back at Beyonce.
No, let's talk about
calls.
It. We could talk about the Destiny's Child reunion. I found that very moving.
Did you
like a soldier coming home from war, reuniting with his kids?
Wow,
I found it very moving.
Wow.
I've waited a long time for the Destiny's Child reunion
on a night with so much
Tina
American
Turner comparison was bad
on a night with so much patriotism.
Yeah,
on a night where the children from Sandy Hook Elementary sang with Jennifer Hudson. And that's where your mind goes, is to the soldiers returning from war. It was like Michelle and Kelly reuniting with Beyonce.
It was
in
beautiful.
In front of 70,000 of their closest friends.
It was beautiful. I'm at a loss for words.
I'm telling you, they were walking on air on Bourbon Street because of it. Didn't matter. There wasn't a football game. Like
what
you said, it was
game?
A concert.
When the lights went out, all they could talk about was the Destiny's Child reunion.
Do you remember, you were an Expos fan, weren't you, rivalry guy?
Yeah.
You went to Expos games when
I went
you were,
to Expos games.
A wee little one?
I went to a lot of baseball games.
And,
like the Expos.
I know Mr. Farrar went to a bunch of games, too.
I went once in a while, yeah.
There you go. I have memories of two power failures at Expos games in the last couple of years. I don't know if any of our listeners can help us out. I definitely saw two power failures. One was in a night game, I think against Colorado, and one was an afternoon game, I think, against Houston.
Hmm.
But I might be totally pulling those two teams out.
There was a famous one in the late 70s that the power went out, and it was out for a while. And to entertain the fans, Ellis Valentine and Andre Dawson stood at home plate and threw balls into the outfield,
really?
Over the outfield fence,
wow,
as home runs. So they had kind of an arm contest, which a lot of people still talk about today.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Type of things that wouldn't happen.
So
nowadays.
Even in the 70s, that stadium wasn't working.
The Olympic one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Hey, I don't understand why there was so much fuss about the power failure last night. I personally didn't think it was a huge deal. I wasn't paying
Mr. Harbaugh seemed to think it was a huge deal.
No, I mean, but there was just seemed to be a lot of much ado about nothing.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, you knew the game was going to get played. You knew that there was obviously some sort of a short. People that were going off and saying, well, this is why New Orleans hasn't recovered since Katrina, are as bad as Brownie.
Mm-hmm.
Heck of a job, Brownie.
Mm-hmm.
You knew Ray Lewis would get blamed for killing the power.
Obviously. Yeah. Obviously. Double killing it.
Double killing the power. Yeah, exactly.
Wow, the rivalry guy is on fire already. Here for 30 seconds, offended 30 people. This is perfect.
The power is now writing a book about how somebody else killed them. Never mind.
You know, there was a Twitter account that was created called Super Doming. Like T-Bowing, Super Doming.
Okay.
And it's just having half your face in the dark. And it's literally catching on right now. People are hashtag was I think trending, super doming.
So
people were tweeting pictures of themselves super doming.
Give me a break.
God almighty, does anybody have anything to do these days? Anybody have any hobbies? Anybody reading? Painting their faces half? And they're calling it super doming? Really? Is this true? They're really doing this thing?
Yeah.
Well, they're doing it. They've been doing it for the last 24 hours. I don't think it'll be exciting in the next 24.
God almighty.
If you're listening to this on thecoffinshow.podbean.com, that fad has already
passed. It's already gone. Yeah.
By the time you downloaded this, it's over.
Far from an evergreen fad,
thankfully.
That's for sure. Yes.
Thankfully. It's like Sy's career.
So, Rivalry Guy, thoughts on the game? And of course, the Rivalry Guy is on Twitter. He has more followers than Jay and I put together times 1,000 and divided by zero.
My goodness.
I know, that's zero.
That's zero.
But,
well, let's get him some followers.
Follow him at Rivalry Guy. Rivalry Guy.
Rivalry Guy. My thoughts on the game.
Yes.
Happened the way I thought it would happen. I had money on Baltimore.
Oh, my.
Very, very happy about this. I predicted Baltimore. I thought they were a better team than New England going into New England at the time. They played the best defenses on the road. They got there, you know, the way a championship team should get there. And I think it was their game to lose. And they came out hard.
And I guess I felt the same way, Rivalry Guy. I honestly felt the same way. I know it's we'll get used to it. Right there, Rivalry Guy.
It's ridiculous.
From the ridiculous to the sublime, right,
yeah.
Mr. Farrar?
Yeah.
Just wait till the Dick
Radio
Cowan conversation.
Show guy.
Radio show guy. Radio show co-host guy. Hey, producer guy, is there anybody on the phone?
Yeah.
No.
Eventually, when we have Dick Pound on, we'll be doing some serious radio.
From being bumped last week to being made fun of live on air.
Yeah,
this is the welcome I get around
you
here.
You have reached the pinnacle, my friend.
Seriously.
Well, you know, if you had a name, then I'd call you
Well,
that.
It's Rivalry Guy. It's got a negative connotation. Obviously, we're supposed to start a rivalry with you, aren't we?
I guess so. Fair enough.
Okay.
Point proven.
Well,
Point J.
Point J.
I'm right.
Maybe he's trying to turn us into rivals.
No, never.
Impossible.
Never.
Jay, impossible. Dave did say he was the better host.
Well,
did
and
he?
He's the better co-host.
Yeah. What? Uh-huh.
Let's not even.
No.
So, Rivalry Guy, tell us about that company you work for.
True Rivalry.
Who are they?
The best clothing line out there.
Oh,
best sports clothing
my.
Line out there.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Then why aren't I wearing their shirt?
I think you are. Oh. Looks good.
You
looks
are
good
wearing
on you.
A shirt.
Silly me.
Looks
you
good
are.
On you.
Yeah, it's nice.
Jay, we gotta get you one.
Yeah, yeah. I like the logo on it. It's kind of sharp. So and I know it comes in different colors. And yeah, I'm down. I love new clothes. It saves me a trip to Winners.
True Rivalry is started by a local Montreal businessman named Jason Portnoy, and like I mentioned earlier in the show, they started with the Halak stop sign. You've seen their Leafs blow shirt on Jay Baruchel. You've seen their Montreal stand up shirt on Mr. Anakin Slade, and and Jay wears one that is quite slimming on him.
Yes, it not
it looks
anymore.
Very good.
It's yeah, I've worn it so much.
Well, when Jay was quite slim, it looked very good on him.
No, wait a minute. Maybe there is going to be a rivalry here. Rivalry
it's
guy.
Working. It's working.
Yeah, Kaufman's edging his way towards that. Yeah, no, I've worn it so much because it is slimming. That it's starting to warp, and it's not because of the quality of the shirt. It's just simply over usage.
Well, you could try washing it every once in a while.
Oh, really?
Well, I don't know. You tell me.
Do I have to?
No, True Rivalry. It's a hot sports clothing brand.
Yeah, and some of the cool things about it is that it's not licensed, so you're not getting your standard sports shirt.
Listen, I pride myself on being the Rivalry Guy, saying the stuff that the fans wish they could say. If you follow me on Twitter, you'll see that. I don't necessarily have any loyalty towards any teams. I'll chirp anyone. If you want to chirp me, feel free to tweet me. But at the same time, that's what's great about the shirts is that they give you the fans a way to make a statement without, you know, actually saying anything, a way to chirp a team without actually saying anything, and a way to show love for your city without actually saying anything.
Some are subtle, some are incredibly overt. Yep. Go to truerivalry.com and check it out. Jay and I are big fans, otherwise we wouldn't be talking about it right now on our show.
Absolutely.
So, Rivalry Guy, you going to start giving us a weekly rant or come on and complain about something, or at least when you have a new line, offer our listeners free product or something cool?
No,
like
for
that.
Sure. We'll I'll come back whenever you want to have me. We'll talk about the week in sports, and you know, callers could call in, and if they feel that they know things better than me, ring it.
We have very smart
throwing
callers.
Throwing down the gauntlet.
I'd be very careful. You can chirp at Jay, and you can chirp at the Kaufman Show, but those listeners, man, I would watch your back.
Bring it.
Rivalry Guy, thanks so much for your time tonight.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We'll catch you soon.
Yes, sir.
And in the meantime, enjoy the week ahead of sports. Big rivalry on Wednesday night. Bruins-Habs. Saturday night, Leafs-Habs. Perhaps the biggest of all
perfect
the rivalries.
Perfect week to get the Rivalry Guy on.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Wow. We're pretty good at this whole programming thing.
Yes, we are.
Super Bowl wasn't such a big rivalry, so. I mean, Harbaugh, but.
Oh, I don't know. Baltimore and San Francisco have been at war for nigh on 150 years.
150 years?
Roughly.
Yeah.
Since like 1849 or something like that. 160? What do you want from me, okay? This is sports. I'm Matt.
I'm trying to create rivalries.
Good job, Rivalry Guy. Now I hate everyone. See him go twisting the night away. He's dancing with the chicken slacks. She's moving up and back. Oh man, there ain't nothing like twisting the night away. Yeah, twisting. Everybody's feeling great. They're twisting. They're twisting the night. Let's twist the one. Our thanks to the Rivalry Guy. Follow him on Twitter and, not a word I use, but chirp at him. We'll be back with Dick Pound. Thank you, Gladys. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. I'm Dave. That guy across from me, he's Jay. And we woke up bright and early this morning.
Ugh.
It's okay, Jay. It was a while ago. You
make me do these things.
Well, it was fun.
God.
You set it up.
No, I didn't pick the time, believe me.
So Jay and I were privileged this morning. We got to go and speak with Dick Pound. And we went to his office and sat on the 40th floor of a gorgeous downtown office building and sat in a pretty neat conference room with Dick Pound. And both of us tried not to get too nervous while he glared at us
with his
answers.
It's kind of an intimidating stare he's got.
A little bit, which is has enabled him to go toe-to-toe with
pretty much everybody.
Pretty much everybody and never one to shy away, very candid. And basically, without any further ado, this is our conversation from this morning with Dick Pound.
Did you watch the Winfrey interview?
I'm happy to say that I don't subscribe to a package that has Oprah's. I wasn't going to sign up for one or two nights. And besides, I basically knew what I was going to hear.
I'm sure that online you caught some of the highlights.
I've seen some of the highlights. And you have somebody there who's struggling with, I think, telling the whole truth. And certainly is not contrite. If he's contrite, it's because he's been caught.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel validated knowing that he was finally owning up to something that he'd been so staunchly defensive about?
Well, that was his journey to take. I mean, we already knew he was guilty. I mean, he's been stripped of all his titles and banned forever from sports. I mean, that was done. The psychological process on his part to acknowledge that he's done it and to come out and say it is a trip he's got to take, and he's got to take the full trip. He's only taken part of it so far.
Is one of the examples of taking the full trip calling you and apologizing?
I'm not holding my breath for that. I think he probably thinks that I'm part of the reason that he got caught.
I'm sure he thinks that. And yet, he spent a fair amount of time, several years, trying to kick you out of the IOC, trying to get you out of WADA.
Yeah.
The irony in that, I mean, I find it interesting.
Well, it was kind of the bullying attitude he had toward everyone who got in his way. And, you know, every once in a while, he picked the wrong person. The IOC and WADA were certainly not going to get rid of me over. It was both Landis and Armstrong that tried it.
Landis is another one of those guys who was pushed by the wayside by Armstrong. It just seems that he left a trail of bodies in his wake.
Yeah.
Including the sport of cycling, I'd say.
It's true. And then why he didn't think some of that would come back to bite him in the rear end, I don't know. I mean, maybe you're just so single-minded and self-centered that you never occurs to you that somebody would turn around and tell the truth about you.
Did he ever
on the inside?
Did he ever threaten you with litigation?
No, the UCI did. They sued the UCI and Fred Rubin sued me in a small court in Switzerland. But again, I was then president of WADA, we defended this thing with full battle armor, and it went away.
Have you ever been threatened with litigation before from others for comments you've made that you know to be true?
Oh, sure. I mean, it's pretty standard stuff, especially if there's an American component to it. That's using the courts to try and slap people down is a pretty standard U.S. tactic.
Where does cycling go from here?
Good question. I think it's a kind of a Yogi Berra thing. You know, when you come to a fork in the road, take it. They can either continue down this death spiral they're on right now, or they can use this Armstrong revelation and conviction as an opportunity to say, okay, let's stop, take stock of where we are. How bad is it really? What has become of the sport? And what can we do to change that? But I don't know that the current management is ready to do that.
Have you advocated for a Truth and Reconciliation Commission?
I have. I use that concept, whether, you know, it's not,
well, yeah.
It's not really a South Africa-level problem, but that sort of thing where you get people in so that they can tell the truth under oath and have some kind of an amnesty or a much-reduced penalty if they acknowledge doping themselves. I think if you don't go through that, you'll never weed out the culture that's there now.
We're seeing that in our province right now in the construction industry.
Yeah.
With the full immunity when somebody testifies. I wonder if that would work across the board in sports.
Well, you can do it. I mean, we have I'm not sure it's a full immunity. I think you can testify in Canada under the protection of the Canada Evidence Act, which does not permit what you say under those conditions to be used against you in a prosecution.
Okay.
And that sort of thing would be thinkable in terms of cycling as well.
You see, now, the thing that I find, there's a big division, and Jay and I have discussed this, between cycling, which is viewed, I mean, it's a professional sport, but it's not viewed with the same kind of luster and glamour in North America as the Big Four. Where do you think the Big Four stands as far as illegal drugs or drugs that performance-enhancing drugs?
I don't think they've made a really serious effort to deal with it. I mean, it was not long ago that the commissioner of the National Hockey League is saying it. Nothing on the WADA list would help a hockey player. Therefore, hockey players don't take any of them. Therefore, there's no point in testing them. It's just a waste of money because nobody takes any of them. I mean, it's absolutely jaw-dropping in its stupidity. And, you know, Sepp Blatter said that about soccer players, too, you know, National Football League has a program, but You're never really sure whether they're worried more about medical type problems of recreational drugs than they are about performance enhancing drugs. Certainly baseball is that way. I mean, baseball has very grudgingly been dragged into the 18th century, at least, where it's, you know, they're now testing for steroids during the season only.
Only.
And not for any of the other things that are known to be used. They're talking about, I think they've agreed to test for human growth hormone, but they're lawyers. Those noted scientists, the lawyers, say they're not sure whether the test is accurate or not. It's insane. And they've got away, I think they've got away for a season and a half now of just preventing the test from being used. So there's not much of basketball is so concerned about off the court behavior that, you know, when they do their collective bargaining agreements, you know, the doping side of it, performance enhancing side of it is the throwaway.
It's scary. I look at baseball, and which has tried to, again, you said they've been dragged into the 18th century. Ryan Braun last year, most valuable player. Of course, there was a Montreal angle to that story because it was a drug test that was supposed to be done at the WADA, the lab in Montreal. His lawyers were able to argue that it didn't get there in time and therefore could have been tampered. We had the batting title champion this year who was suspended halfway through the season. And it doesn't seem to end.
Nope.
And now we have all these guys who've retired and are Hall of Fame eligible, guys like Bonds, Sosa, McGuire.
And another accusation against Alex Rodriguez.
That's right, this in Miami, this clinic that just came out.
It doesn't stop.
Well, and the other thing, you start focusing on it's not the journey of the players that are desperately trying to get on, you know, the bench of the major league teams, the stars. That's a very bad message for this board.
Well, it's a bad message to children watching it, that's for sure.
Well, I mean, to make it to the show, you've got to do this, so the AAA, the double A, then it goes down to university ball, maybe even high school ball. Well, the pyramid is enormous. If you put all four pyramids together, you've got, you know, millions of potential drug users. I mean, it's a national health problem.
Does this come down to money?
Some of it. I mean, my rhetorical answer to that is, how many rich weightlifters do you know?
Right.
You know, and that's
Schwarzenegger would be the one and only, I think.
Yeah.
But he's not even a weightlifter.
No, he's not. He's a bodybuilder.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Come on, Dave. Get it right.
Sorry.
Now, I mean, the developments in bodybuilding are such that he wouldn't make it to a state final.
Right.
These days.
No. Yeah. I was going to ask, even if these four sports were to take this doping thing seriously, are they able to keep up? Because they seem to be coming out with these drugs, which become more and more undetectable, according to what they say.
That's always been the issue, right?
Yeah. Is this a forever battle, or can this thing possibly be won by a certain side?
Well, it's a forever battle in the sense that you're not going to change human nature.
Right.
You can influence conduct, and you know, if you can persuade or cajole or deter 99.9% of the athletes from doing it and give them reasonable assurance that you'll catch the 0.1, then I think you've won the fight. And you know, there's a gap. The perpetrator always has an advantage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the bank robber knows which bank, what night, and your catch-up authorities are the police. But the gap in science is a lot narrower than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And if you know what to test for and when it's likely to be taken, you can be pretty sharp on that. And you can use the indirect evidence, too.
Right.
That's how you catch the big ones like Armstrong. You know, Armstrong supposedly never failed a test.
Mm-hmm.
Or that is the myth, at least. But people who know what was going on, so that's how they got Marion Jones, that's how they got you know, a lot of the track and field athletes.
Mm-hmm.
I sat with so-and-so and watched him inject.
Sure.
That's as good as a positive test.
Whereas in Major League Baseball, the union is so powerful that things like that are very difficult to get admitted into evidence. For player X to say that he saw player Y, or the credibility of player X, someone like Jose Canseco, saying that he injected Mark McGwire with steroids, well, consider the source.
Yeah, I mean, it's, but you can be hanged by the same kind of testimony.
Well,
you know, it is a matter of credibility as well, but that's quite often the only way you're going to catch them.
If you guys don't mind, if you don't mind spending a couple more minutes, we do a lot of Olympics talk on our show, and I'd love to get into that for a few minutes with you. You were one of the architects of the Olympics becoming as big as it is in negotiating contracts with corporations and with the television stations and making the rights be as massive as they are. Do you think that maybe the Olympics have gotten too big?
No, not at all. I mean, I think it's more expensive to run an international sports system now than it ever was. And you need money. I mean, the participants can't do it. Governments have priorities in many countries that just simply don't allow for sport development. So I think that it's important that you divide the money properly, which is basically half and half between the organizers, so that the taxpayers of the host country don't pay the full shot. And the other half is the sports system, so that the international sports federations to develop their programs, the National Olympic Committees to develop theirs, to send kids to places where they can get specialized training, things like that. The IOC itself to run the whole Olympic movement. I think it's a wonderful statement that the private sector can do all that. In fact, you know, when you look at it, if you didn't have the private sector, you wouldn't have organized sport.
Well, in the way that sports has become, absolutely. I don't know if that's a chicken and the egg thing or not, though.
Well, I think, I mean, you know, the governments, historically, governments were not as involved in life in general as they are now. And so if it was going to happen, it happened outside the sphere of government activities. Now, as governments got bigger and bigger, sport essentially occurs within the fully regulated system. So equipment safety and, you know, standards of buildings and stuff like that are all part of the sports scene. But take away the private sector and your whole competitive sports system collapses.
I look out the corner of my eye and I can see the Olympic Stadium. And it's an example. It's not the worst example, but it's an example of something that was built for an Olympics that is severely underused and underappreciated now. There are much more modern examples. Most of the venues from the Athens Olympics I come to mind. Even the stadium in London, they haven't figured out exactly what they're going to do with it yet. A lot of that goes on to the public, doesn't it? A lot of that is, I mean, I think we just finished paying for the Olympic Stadium. In Greece, where you have so many financial issues, do you think that the state still gets involved perhaps too much and it should be shifted to all towards the corporate side? Or should there be better plans in place for after the Olympics? Is there not enough?
I think that's the key. I mean, the Greeks have this psychological identification with the Olympics. The Olympics are theirs. But of the 28 sports that are in the Olympic program, they're only interested in half a dozen of them. All the rest, they don't care about. So they got into these grandiose structures without really planning for the after use, and you know, they got it done in the nick of time as it was, at huge cost overruns. I mean, there's a wonderful story of whether it's apocryphal or not. In the Olympic Stadium in about April of 2004, 4 months before the games, 5 months maybe, somebody's there and there's a guy, you know, attaching the seats to the posts of the concrete. And so we came and looked, and there was maybe 3,000 or 4,000 of them there, and he looks, and all the rest are not there. And he said, listen, are you guys going to be ready for August 17th? And the workman looks up and says, what's August 17th? It's the opening ceremonies of the Olympic Games in Athens, in this stadium. Really? He said, what time on August 17th?
Oh, amazing.
And he said, 8 o'clock at night. He said, oh, no, we'll be finished by then.
I mean, down to the minute, huh?
That's great.
The Montreal Stadium is designed for track and field, and you can make it work for football. Mm-hmm. But it was an awkward baseball stadium, and that was, you know, the obligation of the city of Montreal to keep the Expos here was to have a covered stadium.
Right.
Because all these guys that would come up from their winter ball in the Dominican Republic to face April in Montreal,
yeah. You know,
Jerry Park was pretty tough on them.
Finally, the reason that we were able to speak with you today is because of this conference that you're a part of next week, where you'll be on a chair, I think, with Daniel Sauvageau and Ross Rebliati and a few other athletes. You'll be discussing the Canadian Olympians and how to fund them, gender issues as well. And I just was wondering if you could talk to us a bit about Own the Podium and whether you think it's working for Canada.
I think the Own the Podium has been a very good program. I mean, it takes a lot of the funding decisions on sport matters out of the political realm, puts them in the hands of people who understand the sport. So you don't have the government consideration say, well, we give something to Vancouver, we're going to have to give something to Halifax, and we need a little support for our party in this area. And the result is you make a lot of dumb decisions. So Own the Podium was good in that sense, where the money available for high-performance stuff is pooled and then decided on by knowledgeable folks. It was the hardest psychological thing was, is it a little pushy for Canada? You know, Own the Podium, isn't that a little assertive for Canada? And, which was an interesting take on it. I think it certainly showed in the Winter Games, and we had more concentrated support there that it was effective. I mean, it's too bad our alpine ski team didn't show up, but I mean,
yeah.
But for that, we'd have got not only the most gold medals of any country in the history of the Winter Games, but we'd have had probably the most medals.
Mm-hmm.
So it does work. We were a little diffuse, I think, on the summer program, and call it okay, but not super. But I think the concept is very good.
Well, I guess my follow-up to that would be, even if we're not necessarily appearing on the podium, does that necessarily mean that Own the Podium isn't working? Or is funding necessary? Is it important without the results?
I think it's important as an idea. You know, I've always had the belief that you'll do better if you expect to do better. You're far more likely to win if you expect to win. You and everyone around you expects to win than if you say, I hope I'm going to win. And so building up that confidence, especially when you're dealing with some of these events with thousands of seconds and millimeters of distance, anything that you can use to shed the doubts that hold you back more than anything is an advantage. So getting, you know, the right diet, the right training, having somebody, if you're not naturally able to do it, tell you how to shed those doubts and how to think positive and all the things that go into an optimal sport performance is added value for sure. And we haven't always had that available in Canada.
Well, it's nice to finally see them acknowledging that it's not just about the one-star athlete from the game, but it's about the team, the collective, if you will. And I thought that was well displayed in London. It didn't matter that the only gold was in trampoline. It felt like there was a collective, that people were caring about the entire Olympic team.
Yeah, but I think that's good. But within that particular dynamic, you've got to find some way to get to the top.
Well, Russia's only a year away.
Yes.
Thank you so much for your time.
Pleasure.
Our thanks to Dick Pound. This is The Kaufman Show. Jay and I'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Well, I'm gonna love you, baby, till the wheels come off. And if you kiss me, well, then I'll never wanna stop. And I'm a warm meal steaming from your countertop. Love you till the wheels come off. When I hold you in my arms, I'll tell you of your many charms and kiss you in the morning light if you say it's all right. I know you're tired, I heard you've been used, that your longtime woman, she gave you the blues, but I wanna do right by you. I'm gonna love you, baby, till the wheels come off. And if you kiss me, well, then I'll never wanna stop. And I'm a warm meal steaming from your countertop. Love you till the wheels come off. Daddy don't like you because you're poor, but Mama says.
Jay, can you believe it's already been a year? We've been playing Sarah Jane Skouten on The Kaufman Show for a year now. Tomorrow is the one-year anniversary of the release of Sarah Jane's debut album, Magpie Waltz. And you know what? I'm going to go celebrate tomorrow night. There's going to be a big party. Casa del Popolo on St. Laurent. Doors at 9 p.m. Tickets are $8. Sarah Jane Skouten and her brilliant string band.
$8.
$8. Well worth it.
Why not?
Absolutely.
Less than a movie.
See you there?
I'll see what I can do.
All right. You have your hockey talk tomorrow night or no?
No, there's no game tomorrow, so I'm not doing a post-game show, but I do have the night off, but I haven't had many nights off lately.
I understand.
So I may want to take it easy, but you know what? Very tempting. She sounds great.
Well, and we had Sarah in studio about a year ago as well, and
very nice.
Lord knows we got into trouble for that, so we got to support our local music talent in this town. There's so much great music in this city, and Sarah Jane Skouten is one of many fantastic artists that we like to support.
Of course.
So tomorrow night at Casa del Popolo, one of the great venues in our city on Boulevard Saint Laurent, doors at 9, tickets $8. And there's my plug.
There you go.
So what's going on? What do you think of that Dick Pound interview?
Well, it was very interesting. The man certainly knows what he's talking about.
Huh.
And yeah. He's very decisive on the issues. He knows exactly where he stands, and he's confident where he stands. And
I know you're all about shades of gray, but it's only black and white with that man.
But I respect that. I respect somebody taking a firm decision, standing by it, and backing it up as well.
And the occasional time where he's gone too far, he'll retract, he'll admit it. And, and I can understand getting caught up in the heat of it all, and especially with... There are so many examples where he's been right and people try to refute it. That I remember, I think it was in 2005, he got into a lot of trouble for saying that a third of the NHL was on drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And he made the number up. It was he couldn't substantiate it. And that upset a lot of people and probably affected certain people's opinions of him and allowed people like Lance Armstrong to be able to say, hey, this guy's full of it and you know I'm clean and he just doesn't care about the sport. Nothing could be further from the truth.
Oh, it's so clear.
This man so obviously he cares so much about sport. And
that's why he's doing the conference.
That's it.
You know, he's going out. I mean, this is not some sort of corporate lawyer conference. This is something that, talking about the talent, talking about the future of sports in this country.
Why is Revoliati doing the conference? I have no clue after that interview. Hey, Ross, why are you coming to town for a conference? Well, I've got this, I'm opening up these pot dispensaries.
Yeah. I think he was trying to allude to the fact that because he's been in the news lately and because, you know, he seems to be attracting a little more attention, they said, hey, why don't we get him down here and offer a unique perspective on Canadian talent?
But I think that he offers that perspective even without that.
Sure. Sure. I mean, if you're going to have Dick Pound out there, you might as well have Ross Revliati.
Why? I don't think that Dick Pound, the anti-drug crusade that Dick Pound is on, I'm pretty sure he's leaving alone those sitting on the couch with their feet up eating Cheetos.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the type of drugs that Dick Pound has any issue with.
No, and he didn't
mention... Those are the drugs that make you worse at sports, not better.
That's right. He mentioned recreational drugs, but it's more the doping that he goes after.
Right.
The steroids and performance enhancement.
I think if you were to tell me that Barry Bonds was on... was smoking pot the whole time, I think people would laugh. I don't think that's the issue.
I tell you, there's a lot of reporters who would be happy if he was smoking dope the whole time. You might have gone a little easier on him. Relax, my friend. Relax.
So that was a bit of an interesting not all interviews go smoothly. And I felt like that one was a little bit of a challenge with Ross. He seems like a really nice guy, but maybe my first question didn't come across the way that he was expecting. I'm not quite sure.
I do appreciate his candor, though. I like that he's honest and he says what he feels, and maybe he just won't be that good of a politician in the future.
Well, or a really good one in the vein of a Bullworth.
Right.
Somebody who speaks the truth and says what he believes.
Right,
and,
in a fictional film.
Yes, exactly. I would like to know more about his beliefs outside of the one that we all know about.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to run for political office and not under the banner of the Bloc Pot, then you need to be able to speak on numerous issues and not just the legalization of marijuana.
Well, he ran under the Liberal Party, we could assume that his views are to the left of center. The Liberal Party, which I'm surprised is not the NDP, who are a little bit further left than the Liberal Party is. Especially these days, the Liberal Party seem to be pretty much straight down the middle.
Yeah.
So I was a little surprised that he was with the Liberal Party.
This was in 2009, and this was the Ignatieff,
right.
I think, or it might have been under Martin. I'm not sure, but
right.
he didn't end up running. He got the nomination and then stepped back.
Okay.
Before the election.
Okay.
I don't know, maybe something to do with drugs in his past. I'm not quite sure. Do you think the Liberals didn't do their due diligence on this? Like, oh, an Olympian. Well, that sounds like a great idea. Let's put him in. He'll run. He'll win for sure. He did what?
Hey, listen, Jean Chrétien was the liberal of all liberals, and he once said that when he retires, he'll have a book in one hand and a big joint in the other.
Excuse me?
He did.
Find me that quote.
I will.
While John Kakalakis is doing a sports update at 12:30, I want to find that quote.
I'm doing it right now. I'm going to do some research for once.
For once. Once again, let's all give, I want everybody to know, Jay hooked this up this week. He hooked up Ross Rebeliati and Dick Pound for the Kaufman Show. Thank you, bud. Good job.
My pleasure.
Good job. And it's been a lot of fun. Honestly, Dick Pound is somebody I've wanted to interview for a very long time. I spoke with him when I was in journalism school. God, forever and a day ago, 2005. So almost eight years ago. And was a very nervous kid sitting in that same office that you and I sat in. Mm-hmm. So I felt like I got a mulligan today and I did it all right.
No, you did.
So that
you
was
did.
Cool.
You did, and I could see why they would have him speaking in front of a lot of people. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, and again, I just, we said we're going to go next week. I have a feeling we'll probably get some good audio out of it for the show,
mm-hmm.
and great fodder as well for us to talk about either lifting off or flying high. Do you want to take care of lifting off, and I'll deal with flying high? I feel like there should be a good division of labor here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll do the lifting.
And I'll do the flying.
I'll do the heavy lifting.
Okay.
You do the flying.
2 weeks in a row. I can get used to this life.
Not too bad, huh?
Lifting off and flying high, talent and success in Canada. This is next Monday and Tuesday at the Omni Hotel. And many, many people. In fact, Ken Dryden will be there, and Jay and I are going to, are we going to beg him? How are we going to do it?
Perhaps we shouldn't bother Mr. Dryden anymore. Just leave him to his devices.
To be fair, we haven't bothered him yet.
Yeah.
All I did was show up at his talk last year at Indigo and wait in line and buy a copy of the game so I could ask him if he would appear on the show. And all he did was tell me to talk to his publicist, who was very nice, very nice.
Sure. Girl. It's a publicist.
Exactly. It's their job.
A rude publicist isn't much of a publicist, are they?
But we found out a few days later that he does not speak to TSN.
No.
And I don't know if it's just to the late night shows on TSN 690 in Montreal. Maybe he did the same thing to Matthew and to Mo and to Sack OK. I'm not quite sure. But we're going to work on him. And hopefully nobody will remind us of that lawyer line.
Smother him with love.
Of course.
And build a path to his heart.
How else, right? How else?
There's only one way. You're not going to get him on if you be
if
rude
you
to
what?
The guy.
If you
he
what?
Is a legend anyway. I mean, you don't want to. It's Ken Dryden.
We want him on the show because we want to hear what he has to say. I've never had a guest on this show that I didn't want to speak to.
No.
That would be weird.
Maybe some callers, but that's not true. We love our callers.
Every single one of them. And in fact, we will take some calls. So we got a few minutes now. 514-790-1690 if you're in Montreal. 790-1690. If you're out of town, 1-866-8-7-6. 866-896-2546. All of our archives are available, by the way, at thekaufmanshow.podbean.com. I want to thank you all for making last week's episode our second biggest episode ever of The Kaufman Show, entitled P.K. Subban Signs. If you've been living under a rock for the last 8 days, check it out. It'll be news to you. It's all about P.K. Subban signing. Remember that? Remember that, Jay?
Remember that?
Remember those days?
Remember when that happened?
Oh, I remember it. It was so much fun.
Yes, it was.
Breaking news. You called me Will McAvoy.
I did.
It almost feels like it was last week.
It feels like it was like 7 days ago.
Yeah, it's just amazing.
It's different. Don't you love it when the news breaks? It seems hey, Canadians, we encourage you to keep on making announcements on Monday nights. We're all for it.
To be fair, I'm going to check NewYorkTimes.com right now and just make sure that nothing has happened that we've missed. Hand of U.S. is seen in halting generals rise in Mexico.
No,
we're good. We're good.
We're okay.
Okay. Wait, a little more. U.S. accuses S&P of fraud in suit on loan bundles.
Okay.
All right. You're good?
I'm good now.
All right. All the news that's fit to print, ladies and gentlemen. Don't say we don't keep you up to date. In about 10 minutes time, we're going to be joined by...
I found the quote.
Did you?
Yeah. Now, it's not how I said it. I actually quoted it wrong.
You paraphrased it.
I paraphrased. I was pretty inaccurate.
He said there'd be a... What?
He said, I don't know what marijuana is. Sure you don't. But anyway, he says, I don't know what marijuana is.
Yeah, I remember him saying the same thing about pepper spray.
Yeah. Perhaps he knows what a good chokehold is, though.
He puts it on his plate.
Perhaps I will try it when it will no longer be criminal. I will have my money for my fine and a joint in the other hand. That's what he said.
God bless you, Jean Chrétien. That's amazing.
So there you go.
Okay, well, you know what, Jay? You were not so far off.
I wasn't so far off. It's something about having a joint.
If you'd said to me that Stephen Harper had said it, then I would have right away said you were a liar.
It would be a blatant lie, and I would have turned TSN 690 Studios into a house of lies.
Don't do that.
I know.
Don't do that. This is the home of the Montreal Canadiens.
This is the last place where we need liars on the air, believe me.
let's take a little break. John Kakalakis is going to be around the corner with a sports update. I don't feel like we've updated you much in the world of sports, right?
Yeah, and we just had a big win by the Vancouver Canucks.
That's right.
And you'll hear all about it.
Scores abound for the NHL and the NFL. It's the Kaufman Show. We'll be back with Evan Wansbrough. Baby, tie your hair back in a long white bow. Meet me in the fields up behind the dynamo. You hear their voices telling you not to go. They made their choices, and they'll never know what it means to steal, to cheat, to lie. What it's like to live and die. Prove it all night, prove it all night. There is nothing else that we can do. Say prove it all night, prove it all night. And girl, I prove it all night for you. I prove it all night, I prove it all night. We have not played that song in way too long. I forgot how much I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
That's the Ballad of Ray Ordonez by the Isotopes. And we're about to bring on the Branch Rickey of the Isotopes.
My goodness.
The Miller Huggins of the Isotopes. The Leo Lalip DeRocher of the Isotopes. It's Evan Wansbrough out in Vancouver. Evan is one of the finalists for the MLB Fan Cave. And, you know, Jay, we're such good luck to all the Fan Cave candidates that we figured we'd bring Evan on and reintroduce him to Montreal and allow vice versa to happen.
Sure.
As well. And, you know, people listen in from across not just our great country, but the one a little bit to the south. And this is a hell of a competition. I would be entering it, Mr. Farrar, except that we live in Quebec.
Yeah.
And contests are never open to the residents of the province of Quebec. So I'm going to throw my weight behind Evan Wansborough for the MLB Fan Cave. Check out his video.
You're throwing the support.
Go to the MLB Fan Cave website. Check out his video. It's fantastic. It's smart. It's funny. And here he is. Evan, welcome back to the program.
Oh, thanks a lot, Dave. How you doing?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Pretty good.
It's been about a week now since the announcement came down that you made the final 50, or 52 it is. And I know last year they had 20-something thousand submissions. So already this is quite the lofty achievement, my friend.
Oh, so thanks very much. I'm pretty happy with it. It's been fun, and I'm really pleased that I made it to the top 50 because you know, like you said, there's so many people, and I didn't know what to expect. I knew that they were probably going to have to take someone from across Canada, but I didn't know how many people were applying or anything like that. So it's been a thrill so far.
How many Canadians have made it to the top 50?
This year there are two, myself and one other from the province of Ontario.
Okay, so I guess you guys have to face off somewhere in between, like I guess in the middle of Saskatchewan and have a death match, right?
I guess so. If it comes down to that, I'm going to lose by default just because I'm going to no-show. I don't like to go spend too much time in the middle of the country there.
That sounds fair, unless it's taking you to your next show down the road, right?
That's the only possible scenario.
Now, if you get into the Fan Cave, this is going to mess. I know you were supposed to be coming to play a big punk fest in Montreal in May.
That's correct.
Your band must be freaking out right now.
You know, my band is pretty awesome. They're totally 100% behind me, and the nature of our crew is that it's kind of a rotating cast anyway. So. You know, everyone's pretty supportive because it's not putting anyone's plans in jeopardy except for my own. So
okay, good.
So
what's the plan now? You're in the top 50. How long is it until they whittle down to the final 20 or 30?
They announced the top 30 finalists on February 13th, which I believe is the same day that spring training begins.
Okay, so that's next Wednesday, I believe.
Yeah.
So you've got to do something to convince our entire audience and so many more to vote for you.
That's right. That's the key. I mean, they've presented it as though it's a fan vote, and I know that they're you know, considering the fan vote, but it is open voting, and I know, including myself, everyone's kind of able to vote as many times for themselves as they want, and all their friends are allowed to vote for them. So there's considerations being put more on the campaign that we're all able to launch for ourselves in the next week. And I try to get as much support online via, you know, Twitter and blogging and other web mediums in support of our campaigns. And
so that's what it's all about. Evan, give us the elevator pitch right now. Pretend that you have my entire audience in an elevator. We're going from the ground floor all the way up to Dick Pound's office on the 40th floor. So you've got like 35 seconds to sell us all on why we should vote for you.
Well, in the initial call, it says, explain to us why you are the country's most entertaining baseball fan. Now, I'll be the first to admit that, you know, I'm not the biggest statistics guy, or I'm not big into prospects and things like that. I'm a huge baseball fan, but I can't compete with some of these people who are in the competition who just have such a wealth of knowledge when it comes to statistics and upcoming stars and things like that. But what I do have is a very deep knowledge of baseball to begin with, and a love for it. And I am the most entertaining baseball fan in this competition because I already do that for a living, for a job. I am an entertainer in the baseball world. So I think, like, you know, when it comes down to putting me on TV or whatever they're going to do, you know, it's a television show. It's the entertainment business, I think. So I think they're looking for someone who's who's going to be an entertainer, and I think I have that in me.
I think you'd be a great fit, Evan. I mean, I've never met you personally, but I've had you on the show, and we've spoken a couple of times off air, and I really think that this would be something that would be right up your alley, and something that you could capitalize and have a wonderful time doing.
Thanks.
It's a hell of a grind, though, I will say that. I became pretty good friends with somebody who was in the fan cave last year, Ben Christensen, who I think follows you on Twitter.
We've spoken.
Shaka Brody. And Ben, I'm sure, will be able to give you some great advice. But, you know, you'd think that watching baseball all day every day is easy. It isn't. It's a real grind to watch baseball from 1 o'clock in the afternoon until a 15-inning game on the West Coast ends and it's 2:30 in the morning. And knowing that you're right back at the cave the next morning doing it again.
Yes. Yes. It is a grind. I haven't found anything in life to do that isn't a grind yet. So this just sounds like the best grind of them all.
Good call. Well put, man. I wish you all the best, Evan. If you want to come back on next week and give a little push in the day before the voting runs out, then by all means, we'll do that. We're going to throw all our support behind you. And I mean, you know what a big baseball town Montreal is. So if you can get Montreal support, then you're set.
Absolutely. Well, thanks a lot for having me on the show, Dave.
Thanks, Evan. All the best, man.
Great. See you later.
Bye-bye. There he goes, Evan Wansborough from the Isotopes. Vote for him for the MLB Fan Cave 2013.
You know, there's a lot worse things you can do in life than watching a bunch of baseball games every day.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, that's not too bad. I mean, it can seem long, especially if you don't have any rooting interest in it. But at the same time, not a bad gig.
Oh, man, I would kill for that.
Yeah.
I was so excited to apply for the Fan Cave for the World Baseball Classic. And I'll tell you a little story. When Max the Guru, who you all know on Twitter, a frequent contributor to the show, Max Harris, was in town from San Francisco over the Christmas break. And our plan was to hang out one night and make my Fan Cave application. Do the video, write the thing, just come up with a bunch of really good ideas to make this happen. We start reading through the fine print. And it says, where it says, enter your country, you put Canada. Mm. Enter your province, you can't put Quebec. And that was the end of it. Ended up being a night of Max and I hanging out and not doing the Fan Cave application because I don't have an address in the province of Ontario.
Ridiculous.
I know. I don't understand why we're not included. It is a World Baseball Classic. One of the prerequisites is that you have to speak the official language of the country that you live in.
Mm-hmm.
I know I can tick both of those boxes, man. Yeah, exactly.
Or both. Yeah. And, you know, I see that all too often happen where Quebec is excluded from contests and participating in this kind of thing. I don't know why. Maybe somebody can explain to me why. Is there a reason? Is it because they're assuming that everybody in Quebec speaks French and wouldn't be looking at it? I don't know what it is. I have no idea.
I've been told it's to do with basically making all the rules and the entire contest available in French as well. And that's too much of a pain in the ass for most companies to do.
Oh, I see.
What bothers me about that is that this is the World Baseball Classic. It's an international tournament. There's every language other than French on the website.
Right.
You now, want information in Japanese on the World Baseball Classic? You can get it.
What if there was a French team involved?
France came very close.
Yeah.
Wasn't Eric Gagné on the one of their pitching coaches or something this year?
Very possible.
France was in that play-in tournament. I can't remember who they lost to. Maybe they were in the division with the with Spain and Israel. I'm not quite sure.
Okay.
Baseball powerhouses of Spain and Israel.
Yes. Wouldn't want to mess with them. Spain and Israel. I was trying to think of maybe there's another country.
To be fair, we had this conversation when Spain and Israel played, and all of Spain was Cuba, and all of Israel was USA.
Right. Then that's okay.
They were all dentists.
They were all dentists on one team, and the other ones were bullfighters. stereotypes are funny.
Right. Because lots of Cubans are bullfighters.
Yeah. Yeah, I was wondering if there's another French-speaking nation which may have a shot. But there are African nations, and I'm not sure they're playing too much baseball over there. But
no, the only country in Africa that's starting to play baseball is Uganda.
Uganda,
which I think is English speaking.
Yes, Uganda is an English speaking country. So,
but no, I don't think outside of Quebec. I think Quebec is the only Francophone baseball powerhouse in the world. And
well,
aren't we proud? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's too bad, Dave. It's too bad that you weren't able to enter it because
I know, you could have had this show to yourself for 6 weeks.
Oh, God. How wonderful that would have been.
Well, think you would have brought in Ron to be your co-host.
We'd be off the air.
Let's go. Let's bring in Ron. Ron, would you have been Jay's co-host while I was in New York for 6 weeks? And I figured with that kind
he's excited about it,
would you have brought
too.
That exuberance to the show, Ron?
Why not?
There you go.
That's better.
How are you, man?
Not bad. Yourself.
Good.
Yeah. It's got to do with Yes.
I'm sorry?
The it has to be also written in French, but it also has to do with the lottery board.
Right. That was it. Okay.
It's the lottery board.
Okay.
Because they want to cut.
Hmm. Well,
you know, the mafia wants their cut.
Well, them too. Everybody wants their 3%, right?
Yeah, they want their cut.
Speaking of, your check is in the mail, Ron.
You know, so that's pretty bad. But talking about Dick Pound,
yeah,
and going on with it, it's only going to get worse.
Of course it is. Because the drugs are going to be that harder,
well, no,
that much harder to detect.
Because they're not going to be drugs. It's going to be genetic, you know, everything's going to be genetic manipulation.
Yeah, but you'd like to think that there's some people out there that wouldn't want to do that to themselves.
Put it this way. It's so advanced, okay, you could actually have a designer baby. If you can afford it, okay?
Yeah.
That's how advanced genetics are. Okay, so especially if you're American, where the laws don't forbid it, and you can afford it, you can order a baseball player or a football player or whatever you want. That's going to be hard.
I'm hoping my kid's left-handed.
Stem cell research is also going to be hard because it's going to allow athletes to play sometimes longer if they can, you know, have you know, like parts, you know, muscles rebuild.
Usually
when you cut muscles, you know, they don't grow back.
Right? Yeah, well, you're already seeing that. You're already seeing players coming back from injuries which 10, 15, 20 years ago would have taken weeks. Max Pacioretty is a prime example. He had an appendectomy.
The prime example won the Super Bowl. Actually, hold on, Ron. The prime example won the Super Bowl yesterday. Ray Lewis came back from an injury that nobody has ever come back from.
Right.
I know. Like, it defies logic.
Right. Or at least the invention of deer antler spray. Which is supposedly what he did.
Yeah.
But in the NFL, it doesn't matter. He could have done anything. It's a 4-game suspension, and you're still eligible for the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I'm not implying that Max Pacioretty is doing any kind of steroids.
No, that's modern medicine.
It's just modern medicine.
No, yeah. Patrick played the day after or 2 days after he got his appendix removed.
Yeah, but there was a different. I was reading about that this week. There was a difference in the surgeries that, like, Waugh, I think, only had his appendectomy after the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever he had was just to allow him to continue to play.
Pacioretty's was an emergency appendectomy.
Right.
He was already showing symptoms.
It was an emergency, but it didn't burst. So there was no problem with peritonitis.
Well, once it bursts, you're in trouble.
Well, yeah, because then you have to go on antibiotics. For peritonitis and so on and so forth, all right?
Dr. Ron.
Okay. Well, don't you know all these things?
Well,
I
know a lot of things. I don't know everything.
You seem to be so well-versed in so many subjects.
Well,
Ron. I thought you would know that.
No, you know what? I forgot my hippopotamus oath. What can I say?
I never took one.
Anything else we can do for you tonight?
Okay. Sorry?
Yeah, I said anything else we can do for you tonight? You a big Ross Rebliati fan?
Well, listen. I'll listen, find out, and PK will be gone in 2 years.
Oh, I hope not, man.
He will.
I really hope
he will.
Not.
Look, I'm sorry, but you know, like, I didn't know what Jay was becoming Gilligan.
What do you mean?
You know, my little buddy there.
My little buddy?
In that commercial with...
Oh, careful, Jay.
I didn't know Jay was reduced to Gilligan.
He's referring to the McLean's Pub commercial I did with Sergio Mavesso.
I heard that tonight. It's fantastic.
Isn't it?
Like, yes.
You sound like you're real tall.
Well, compared to Sergio Mavesso, I'm not.
I know that.
Yeah.
You still sound like you're taller than me.
Yeah, I'm 6'1".
I'm 5'6", so, you know.
How does somebody sound tall? Just throwing that out there.
It's in the voice,
Dave. I don't know. It's that the voice and the persona.
Ron, how tall am I?
5'8".
Oh, wow. That's harsh. That's harsh. You just put me shorter than Doug Flutie, man.
5'9", maybe.
Oof. Well, 5'9", you're close.
Yeah.
I know you're around, you know, from the pictures I've seen, you know, you're 5'8", 5'9".
I am not quite 5'10". Maybe with my heels.
I know you're not 6 foot. I saw, you know.
No, I am not. Jay Baruchel makes me look like a midget. You're right.
Yeah, well, Baruchel's my height. He may be even taller, I think, than I am. He's about 6'2", I think.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he is. He's a tall guy.
He looks small.
Ron, well, let's just have this game. How tall are you, Ron?
He said 5'6".
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, well, then he's calling me lofty if he thinks I'm 5'8". I guess everything's in the eye of the beholder,
right? That's right. And, Ron, you sound 5'10",
like
to me.
It's like you said last week, okay? All right. He's got swag, okay? He's too black for the little white boys, you know?
Well, to be fair, Jay didn't say that. You're just adding that part in.
Actually, that's pretty much what I said.
He said he had too much swag and he was too black. He said that.
I said, yeah, that people were uncomfortable. You know, you're right. You know, you're not misquoting me at all. I said that he seems to rub people the wrong way.
And I say the way they've been treated, okay, I saw a white man and he walked a black dog.
I'm sorry?
What?
I did not catch that.
I saw a white man and he walked a black dog. Well, it's a hard rain going to fall.
Oh, my goodness. I hope Mitch isn't listening or he's going to kick my ass right now.
Ron, I wrote that. I got to write that to Mitch.
Yeah, if it's a good test if he's listening or not, right?
I'm going to write that to Mitch.
You do it. You do it.
I already wrote him a piece already.
Well, good. You keep on bothering Mitch.
Well, put it this way. He completely disagrees with you.
On
the doping and stuff like that.
What do you mean?
Well, he thinks like people, you know, like he, you know, as far as he's concerned, all these people, Barry Bonds and all these other people, okay, they belong in the Hall of Fame, period.
I think so. I think Bonds should be in the Hall of Fame. I just think it should say that he was the champion of the steroid era on the plaque, but I think he should be in.
No, he said there shouldn't be any whatever.
Well,
cheating's been part of baseball, he goes.
To be fair, Ron, if I had the same opinions as him, it'd be hard for me to have a show on his
cheating's
station.
Cheating's been part of baseball for forever.
It has.
You know, everybody's found a way to cheat.
Yeah, it has. It has. And if we knew more back then there would have been more of a hue and cry about it. But
no, but it was normal things like, you know, like who's the pitcher who had a Coke bottle cap? Yeah, had part of his glove was cut out.
Right? Yeah, there's Gaylord
Perry.
And he had that bottle cap.
Yep.
Right, and he used to scuff up the ball with that.
Yeah, Don Sutton, too, I think, was renowned for that.
That's cheating.
Yeah,
it's
cheating.
I think what Ron's saying is that this seems to be, there's more of a moral dilemma when it involves altering your body in order to exceed at a sport, and it sends out the wrong message to the youth.
That's the difference.
That's the difference.
That's what I worry about.
Yeah. That's the difference.
That's what I worry about.
And that's why
that's
I think...
That's what bothers me about the whole thing.
But another thing that I firmly believe, Ron, is that you can't gloss over history. You can't pretend that things didn't happen. There was a scandal in baseball. It gave baseball a serious black eye for a long time, and everybody turned a blind eye to it. Because at the time, baseball was in the gutter, and they needed something to give people hope. Now, I think all of that needs...
All of a sudden, the attendance went way, way up.
That's right, and people started paying attention, and McGuire and Sosa were on the Today Show and Good Morning America and CBS Morning News every single day, and there were hundreds of media going city to city to city to watch this BS home run chase.
Yeah,
and we all bought it, including myself.
As far as I'm concerned, it's still Hank Aaron.
Of course. Same year.
I'm sorry.
Same year.
Like, I mean, you could see how he went down and down and down. And he said it was harder and harder and harder every year.
But, Ron, it doesn't take away the fact that Bonds is the best player I've ever seen play. And I know you're a little older than me, so you saw...
The best player you've ever seen play?
Absolutely. Absolutely, without a question, the best player.
Not in the field.
No, not in the field. Offensively. And when he was with Pittsburgh, if...
I would go Ken Griffey Jr. for me.
Yeah,
but he was more exciting, you know,
and a complete ball player. Yeah.
Bonds was the best hitter I've ever seen, and
but he's definitely in the argument for me too. I agree with you, Bonds.
Oh yeah,
for me,
no,
yeah.
Absolutely. Reggie Jackson.
Well, again, you know, you're so old, Ron. I can't compete with that.
No, it's because like, for example, in that World Series with the New York Yankees, okay?
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, like, you know, to me, somebody who's great, okay, is somebody who can bring it when you really need it.
Yeah.
You know, you need those home runs. You know, I mean, take away those home runs, or Yankees don't win.
Weren't they on three pitches, too?
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy stuff.
You know, so I mean, and I remember seeing that, you know.
But, you know, that was 1977. I was but a glint in my parents' eye, Ron. So I've got to go with what I know and
well,
what I've seen.
I enjoyed Joe Carter just as much.
As what? As Bonds?
No, watching that. I mean, you know.
Oh, you're talking about the home run, yeah.
You're down to your last out.
Sure.
All of a sudden, click, and I said, that's it. It's gone.
Yeah, and you know what? The funny part is it barely cleared the fence, but...
Well,
that was a moment. That
counts.
Was a moment. They all count, exactly. As long as they go over the fence, they count.
But the Expos weren't there, so.
Well, thanks for ending it on a high note tonight, Ron.
It always
Ron.
Comes back to that,
thanks for
it?
Ending it on a high note.
Yeah.
You're like the rivalry
I'll
guy. You're just going to be pissed
that.
Off.
I'll never forget that.
Ron, thanks so much for the call, man.
Take care, guys.
Have a good one.
Bye.
Let's go to Mike in St. Leonard.
Oh, by the
yes, Jay.
Sorry,
yes.
Sorry to interrupt you,
yes.
But by the way, that Reggie Jackson, three home runs.
Yeah.
In 1977,
yes.
That's back when Ron was 5'7".
Oh,
so
right,
yeah, things have changed over the years.
He hasn't had enough milk since then. It's
yes.
Not, I will not pick on Ron while he's not on air. He takes notes.
I
he's going to remember this
I know,
next week.
I know. He's going to come back at me with something else, and you're welcome to it, Ron. I deserve no less.
Side note, how cool is it that our listeners take notes during our show? That's awesome.
That's
that's just the best. Jimmy, we're going to go to Mike and St. Leonard. And then we are going to go to track 18, and then we are going to go to bed. Hello, Mike.
Hi, guys. How are you?
How are you, man?
Good. We have to take notes. The rivalry guy put that out tonight. You know, he wants to take us on. So
that's awesome.
Got to be prepared. You know, I don't know what craziness he's going to come up with next week.
I can't wait to see what's going on in the world of sport. Well, he's got the big rivalry games with the Habs this week.
Well, yeah, that's it.
Because otherwise, this is normally known as the dead week in sports, right?
That's true. I was going to ask you, actually, Dave, because you're just talking about, you know, the best player you've seen. I'd probably say Bonds as well for myself. Who's the best Expo you've ever seen play?
Huh. I don't remember Dawson. I remember Raines, but towards, I guess, 87, 88, 89. I have vivid memories of Raines' last game in Montreal.
Yeah.
My grandfather and I snuck down into the second or third row behind the Expos dugout. And I remember... People were very upset that day, knowing that Tim Raines was playing his last game in an Expos uniform.
Crazy.
Best Expo I saw. I mean, the stock answer is Guerrero or Pedro.
Yeah, I'd say
Guerrero. A lot of people would go Pedro Martinez on that.
Yeah, I'd say Vladimir. He was a game changer. Maybe just that he played with other guys who weren't at his level on the team, whereas, you know, Dawson had, you know, Carter and Raines there. And,
right.
Cromartie, you know, the list goes on.
See, like, my memories of Carter are way too late. They're of 92.
Okay.
I don't remember. I was four when we traded Gary Carter. I was born in 1980.
Okay, I was born in 72, so I saw him play, you know?
Oh, poor guy. Had your heart broken as a nine-year-old. Nine-year-old on Blue Monday.
Like I told you last week, I mean, that was bad times. Good times, bad times, man. Good times, bad. I just wanted to call in to see what you guys thought of the whole PK week that would never end.
I feel like we started that fire.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it started good, and then it didn't go so good for a bit, and, you know, the icy receptions. But I knew that you'd spoken before. I haven't checked Twitter yet about what's going on with
Stubbs.
Stock.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's the deal with this? What's happening?
Well, I don't know. I read Stubbs' article, and he makes some points. I didn't see. I was at the game on Saturday, so I didn't watch Hockey Night in Canada.
Okay.
But supposedly there were examples where P.J. Stock would point to certain things, like P.K. Subban walked into the Bell Center by himself.
Yeah.
And at one point they showed a video of Subban in the dressing room with a hoodie on and his headphones on.
Yeah, and his head down.
And P.J. Stock used both of those examples as reasons that that Subban wasn't a part of the team.
Yeah.
That, you know, most guys walk in with someone else and guys wouldn't be so isolated. Again, I personally
that
don't know.
That is so ridiculous.
It's completely ridiculous.
That is ridiculous. How can you, that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. How could you possibly make that assumption by a guy sitting there in what, no player? You've never seen a player come in? You know, they all got earphones on. They walk in, they sit down, they're in the zone, they're concentrating before the game. Maybe it's their moment to meditate, to keep their mind clear. How could you possibly come to the assumption that the guy's not a team player because the man's sitting there listening to his headphones?
So, Mike, Dave Stubbs tweets out his column 8 hours ago.
Yeah.
Stock's misguided Hockey Night in Canada take on Habs and PK Subban was sensational, irresponsible, and entirely wrong, and in the link.
That's true.
PJ Stock responds in three tweets. Part one, Dave Stubbs, I miss the days of professionalism and real hockey writers at the Gazette like Red Fisher. Two, you better have research to back you because I do, and the experience of being in that room to know what's what. Three, next time write an honest article without your Habs pom-poms on.
Wow. Ouch, ouch, ouch.
Yeah. I don't know why this is worth going to war over. I think that PJ Stock has some things to learn in the world of journalism. And going after Dave Stubbs seems very silly to me. And I understand a lot of people might think that PJ Stock has the upper hand on this because he's on Hockey Night in Canada.
Well,
I feel like Dave Stubbs is a very respected writer. And you know, I don't think people understand that in order to have access, like a lot of these guys do, they're maybe not going to write every mean thing that comes across their plate.
Yeah.
But because of that, Dave Stubbs gets the exclusive with Martin Brodeur during the lockout.
Yeah.
Gets to speak to Carey Price from here, there, or another place.
They trust him.
Yeah, they trust him. Yeah. And in order to gain that trust, then you can't be the guy that overhears something or... I don't know. Jay, do you disagree? I feel like you disagree with me.
No, I don't. Not at all. I'm just thinking about him sitting with his hoodie and his earphones on.
Hold on. Like every basketball player ever?
Ever. Yeah. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe a hoodie and earphones are a little too black for PJ. I'm not sure.
You know, I hate to go down that road again.
No, I love going down that road because it's the truth, Mike.
I only like going down it with you, Mike. It makes me feel comfortable.
He seems a little more uncomfortable when I do it.
You know, I watched the Hockey Night in Canada, which is the worst part about it is that Elliot Friedman sits at the end. He's the smartest guy out of all of them.
Oh, he's great.
He can't get an A between him and Glenn Healy, but Elliot gets like three words in and it's the most intelligent thing. And then, of course, they cut back to PJ. But, I mean, they did. I mean, they showed him walking in. They showed him with his head down, with his earphones on and his hoodie on. And you know what? I mean, you can make it seem like anything you want it
anything,
to.
Anything, right.
When you're speaking over it, you know?
Right.
And then I watched the...
There he is, listening to his gangster rap.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, how do you know he doesn't have Johnny Cash on that thing, you know?
Exactly, you know? But then I watched, even on RDS, what happened before the game is they had Benoit Brunet talking, and he was really upset with the fact that... Josh Georges and Markov spoke the way they did. He said, that's the kind of stuff, in French, of course, that's the kind of stuff that should be kept in the room and never spoken to the media.
Right.
And
because it's just fodder, and people are trying to get hits for their websites and hits for their podcasts. And
it's fuel on the fire.
It's the 24-hour news cycle that we live in right now.
Well, that's why I even texted Josh George. I said, really? You just couldn't have said you're happy to have him back and let it end at that. You know, you made things worse for everybody.
I know what Markov said, but I actually don't know what Georges said. What did he say?
It was a kind of like a general, I'm not, he didn't say anything positive or anything negative. He just kind of said, I'm happy now that it's going to end, and everyone has to buy into the concept. BDK has to, I have to, Brian Gionta has to. So it's kind of like a backhanded put down. More like, I'm just happy that you guys aren't going to bother me anymore about this. Not anything positive. You know, it's the oddest thing, you know, when you say to someone, I need you to eat humble pie, you're out of control, your skin may be too dark, I'm not sure, but by the way, I need you to play 24 minutes a night. You know,
yeah.
It's like, it's two divides. It's like, he's a terrible person.
But can you play it a little whiter? Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's what, yeah, you know. I mean, after the low five thing, I was thinking, that's what I texted.
Yeah, put
out.
Some sandals on and start square dancing. Do that.
Well,
be a little whiter, will you?
Well, I put it out. It probably was inappropriate. Maybe it's just me being sensitive.
No, but I mean, there's a point to it. And it's not about
Well, hold on. What did you put out there after the 0005, Mike?
I put out, I think Therion was going to ask him to see Michael Jackson's dermatologist to see if he can go a little bit lighter, you know?
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, he's a little bit too urban for us. I mean, we got to get him a little bit whiter and a little bit more Canadian. No more gangster rap.
Right.
The hoodie's got to go.
Remind me where he's from again?
Exactly.
Toronto, know? Right?
Well, you know, I put that out as well, too. You know, we have French Canadians like Briere who won't sign here after Beliveau calls you. But, you know, an English black guy from Toronto is dying to play here, and we treat him like garbage, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole...
But who's the we in this? Because, well, because frankly, the we is not the city
not
of Montreal.
The
They're not the people. I've sat there on Monday.
Not the
It wasn't 21,273, I'm sure of that.
Yeah.
But let's call it 20,000.
Yeah.
Yelling PK, 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 and when he first stepped on the ice, the crowd went crazy.
I was there.
It was a wonderful feeling.
I was there. Yeah.
What are the odds, both of us at a hockey game?
Yeah, amazing. Not together, too.
No, that's okay.
And you know what? A lot of people make the excuses that Georges and Markov were kind of told not to talk about PK by the team. This is not true because obviously Ryan White, Brandon Prust, and Colby Armstrong didn't get that memo, did
right.
they?
Right.
You know? So, I mean, it, like you said, glad to have him back. Let's play hockey. Would have been perfect.
Yeah.
But anyway.
They put fuel on the fire. I was only saying those things because I know it's not the fans. The fans love him. You can
they
see
do.
That. You know what the problem is? The more you cheer for him, you make it worse for him. You
Why?
Know? If anyone's jealous of him, if Therion's mad because he's getting too much attention, the more attention on this guy, the worse it is for him. That's the way I look at it.
Okay, so not allowed to boo a guy like Brisebois, then you're gutless bastards.
That's
and
right.
not allowed to cheer a guy like Subban because it's making the other players jealous?
Well, look at what's happening.
I would say this is like a soap opera, but it kind of is. And in fact, it was in On in English on TSN at 8 o'clock tonight.
What they need is a few more games. Give it some time. Just ask what Andre Dawson thinks of Gary Carter now, as opposed to what he did 30 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay?
Exactly.
Give it time. I'm not saying we should wait 30 years, but hopefully he'll be playing. He'll keep his mouth shut. And I'm not saying that he should sell out, but he'll do what he has to do for the team.
Yeah.
And maybe gain the respect back, if he wants it, from his teammates.
What I never understood is, how did he lose it to begin with?
I don't understand that either.
I mean, that's another thing.
Since when is holding out for a contract the great sin of all time?
Well, this is why I was more upset and I took the racial angle. Is like, I saw way too many people who were happy to say he needs to eat his humble pie, he needs to know his place. Know his place.
Yeah, that's
probably what got my spine.
That's ugly. Yeah. That's ugly.
Yeah.
There's some undertones there.
Yeah, those were the undertones that really got to me because, like you mentioned before, Jay, it's not out in the open anymore. It's just... that insidious
this is,
little word.
Yes,
like,
this is a new rave
play.
Of subtle racism, which is so dangerous.
Yep.
It is so dangerous. It's the undertones. Like, you know, it's like I said, I'd rather a guy burning a cross on the lawn. At least you know where he stands. You know, he's being honest. But when you get these little undertones, and it's not even, it's not as clear
you know,
as.
It's the Fox Newsification of it all. It's like,
right.
oh, look how well-spoken he is.
Yes.
Yeah. Abby Goldberg, actually.
What a natural athlete.
Abby Goldberg.
The little subtle tones like that, yeah.
Abby Goldberg, who you've had on.
Yes.
Did that. He went on that route, and I did text him because I follow him. He follows me. And he said he'll contact me later for more details. But he got the sense, and he did tweet, that he felt the way they were telling PK not to do the lo-fi was kind of like when they were telling Obama not to do the fist pump with his wife and kids.
Mm-hmm. You mean like, the one that Fox News called the terrorist fist bump?
Exactly.
Yeah.
A little bit too urban. We're not sure what Muslim thing he was doing.
Yeah.
And he will kill us all.
And it's become that. It's become more of a disdain for, it's the cultural thing.
It's the cultural thing.
Yeah. It's not the old, well, they're black, they're not human type thing.
The only thing I'll say.
It's a cultural thing. Too much swag,
the
man.
The only thing I'll say, Mike, in defense of the banning of the 0005, was that it was weird to see that kind of a celebration on a last place hockey team.
Yeah, it was weird, but you know what? Someone called in on Ted Bird on Saturday when he was doing the pregame show, and he felt that it was fine. And the reason he defended it was someone came and said the exact same thing. And he said, well, is it okay for 500? Is it okay for playing 600 hockey? When is it okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, now we're going to get into, well, if you have 20 wins by March 1st, you can do the low. I mean, it gets ridiculous.
Well, no, but I think there are traditionalists out there who will say, Maurice Richard never did a 0005.
Yeah,
Doug Harvey and the Gumper never 0005'd each other.
Personally, I couldn't care for it myself, but like other people were making the point. The kids loved it.
It's fun. You know what? It's like telling Usain Bolt that he can't do the thing after the race.
And remember, Jacques Rogue was not happy with him when he first did that. The guy was
I don't remember that.
Yeah. The guy heading up the IOC, and Jack Todd was all over him for that, was saying the exact same thing we're saying now. There's a definite difference. Jacques Rogue's world and Usain Bolt's world are two very different worlds.
I don't want to live in a world where Michael Jordan dunks the ball without his tongue, with his tongue in his mouth, with his tongue firmly planted in his cheek.
Yeah.
Listen, I don't.
It's a generational thing.
I don't need the icky shuffle on every touchdown, but yeah. I want to know the guy's happy.
Yeah. Well, that's the one thing I will give PJ. Is that
PJ or PK?
PJ Stock.
Okay.
One thing that he did mention on Hawk and Knight in Canada, and Glenn Healy, the big mouth, did mention is that, I mean, could he get any louder? I'm not sure.
I don't know. I was at the game.
Don't watch Hawk and Knight in Canada, by the way.
But, oh, really? Come on. Don Cherry? Really?
Yeah.
You can't tell by my leanings that I'm a huge Don Cherry fan?
Don Cherry fan. Me too.
Oh, man. But, you know, surprised. Frankly, we both have the same favorite band, probably.
That's it, you know? But the thing is, he didn't look happy. And that was the one thing Glenn Healy did mention, is that they look like they're trying to crush his spirit, which may not end up working well for the hockey team overall. And he didn't look happy at all. It almost looked like even after the interview, he did an interview in between periods. It's almost like if he was under orders, don't smile, you know, and he wouldn't smile. He did an interview with Cassie Campbell, didn't smile. I was like, wow, he really looks not happy, you know? I don't know if I'm looking too much into it, but it looked like if he went out of his way, you know, wasn't looking directly at the camera, would be looking away from it. That's the only thing that I could read into it. I thought, a little bit odd, but maybe it is uncomfortable for him there. I'm not sure.
Let us hope that we're just reading into it, and it's something that we're all guilty of. It's look at that guy's body language.
Yeah,
he looks
exactly.
So upset. And, I mean, I remember thinking that during the Super Bowl last night. There were moments during the game, well, look at their body language. There's no way they're coming back from this. What do I know? What do I know?
But you know what? As long as the Canadians...
Turns out people in Maryland don't get excited from Beyonce, and people in California go crazy and mount comebacks.
Exactly. You know, let's just say, you know, if the Canadians keep winning, all of this will become a moot point.
Yeah.
And that's what's Therrien's greatest card right now.
Hey, remember that loss to Ottawa last week? Because nobody seems to.
No, that's ancient history now. Now we have to see if we get our heads beaten down by Boston. If they beat Bruins, I mean, we can start planning the parade route.
Right, until Saturday after. When Toronto comes back into the building, and we know how that went down on the first game of the season.
Yeah.
So big tests ahead. And
Very big games.
As Eric Thomas pointed out in game night, which ran before the Kauffman Show tonight on TSN, 20% of the season's almost over.
Yeah.
Which is unfathomable. It's just, I mean, it's flying by right now.
Well, a lot of these teams like Philadelphia are just going to run out of track, basically. Even if they get things turned around, they just won't have enough time. And that's what's playing to the Canadiens' advantage right now, which is great.
Nice to see a good start. And, knock on wood, things continue. But it would be nice to see PK Subban. Let's assume that Ron, the caller before you, is right and that it's 2 years and he's done.
Yeah.
Let's let them be a good couple of years.
Yeah, for sure.
I hope that they aren't 2 years filled with animosity. Because that would... To have two crappy years followed by him going somewhere and kicking our asses all over the ice would not be a fun
thing to see. Would not be fun at all.
Anaheim with Saku.
Or maybe Boston with his brother, and that would be the worst thing on earth.
No, the worst thing on earth would be him going home to Toronto, and then every game against Boston, we lose to Subban the goalie, and every game against Toronto, Subban the defenseman scores on us.
Yeah.
Oh, you want to bring up the Expos, make me even happier? Because we're going to end the show now.
Well, you know, that's why I ask you who your favorite Expo, best Expo you've ever seen.
Well, my favorite Expo, I have the answer. Best Expo, I feel like I have to say Pedro Martinez, but I'm torn between him and Vlad. I have so many great memories watching Vlad play. My favorite Expo of all time is Delino DeShields.
Yeah.
And for reasons, as many reasons off the field as on.
Okay.
But Delino is a hero and a role model to me, and will always be.
Cool.
Yeah, and I'm hoping he can manage in the majors someday.
Yeah, that'd be great.
He's in Double A now, which is kind of cool because he's in the Reds organization. And there's a kid in the Reds organization by the name of it's Billy Hamilton, I think.
Okay.
Somebody in this room, please correct me if I'm wrong. Somebody type in Billy Hamilton into a computer. Jesus, everybody's just sitting here. Minor leaguer, stole 96 bases last year. Broke Vince Coleman's record for stolen bases in professional baseball in a season. And I think they're going to have Delino with him pretty much all the way up through the ranks. Am I right, Jay?
Yeah, it's Billy Hamilton.
Okay, good. I just wanted to make sure I'm not getting Josh Hamilton and Billy Hamilton mixed up.
No, it's Billy Hamilton.
Okay, because that would be very P.K. Subban of me to mix up Billy Hamilton and Josh Hamilton.
Right.
Wouldn't be nice.
The New Blue Wahoos.
That's right.
The New Blue
Pensacola?
Wahoos.
Is that it? All right. Yeah, Delino's managing in Pensacola, Florida this year.
Okay.
And Billy Hamilton, I think Delino's going to teach Billy Hamilton everything he needs to know to refine stealing bases and being a great stolen baseman, much like Delino was before injuries ravaged his career.
You must have been devastated when Delino got traded.
I cried and cried.
Like a baby.
Go back to the archives. Last January, we had a show where I interviewed several Toronto Blue Jays.
Mm-hmm.
And in there is a conversation that I have with Alex Anthopoulos where we both talk about our reaction to Delino being traded and how sad we were. And across the board, everybody thought it was a terrible deal. I remember Jeff Blair panned the deal.
Yeah.
It was, who was the skinny 5'7"? He was Ron's height.
Ron will get you next week.
I know he will. He's going to get me. I'm going to wake up to like 8 threatening tweets.
He will get you.
Mike, I think it's time for me to go to bed.
Have a good night, guys.
Thanks for the call, eh?
You bet, guys.
All
Take
the
care.
Best.
Goodbye.
Good night, Mike. And good night to all of you. I want to thank our guests. Ross Rebliati. I'm going to go home and think of Ross Rebliati tonight, I think.
That's weird.
Yeah, he will come to mind while I'm sitting on my couch.
Okay.
And unwinding from the night.
Oh, I see.
Memories of 98, Jay. Memories of 98. Thank you to Dick Pound. Listen up, kid. Best name of a guest we've ever had, Jay?
Yeah.
I can't think. I mean, Ellis Valentine's a great name.
Ellis Valentine's a nice name.
All right. So Ellis Valentine and Dick Pound run.
So is Delino DeShields.
Delino DeShields. Marquise Grissom.
Sure. Goes on and on and on.
It sure does. Evan Wansbro. Vote for him. MLB Fan Cave. And finally, the rivalry guy, who we'll be hearing more and more of. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you, Dave. A lot of fun tonight.
Thank you, John Kakalakis. Thank you, Jimmy G on the board. Play us out, Joel.
In the early days, we all understand why you moved away. We'll hold a grudge anyway. I shot the shit with miniature Tim. If he needs a tune, I'll write one for him. We like the same books and we like the same sounds. There's a reason that I love this town. I played a show in Kelowna last year. Said, pick it up, Joel. We're dying in here. Picture one hand clapping, then picture half that sound. There's a reason that I hate that town. If you saw my band in the early days, then you understand. Davey and me, face down in our suit, some French restaurant, I saw Riviere de Loup. Last night at the tour, we burnt the place to the ground. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town.
Another Kaufman show in the books. He's Jay, I'm Dave, and we'll be back next week.
I don't know.
that sound like?